is remarkable. He comes up towards the winning line under Davy Russell to win his second Randox Health Grand National.
Desert Orchid, watch history being made. Roars of applause. The King's in his county.
Heading down towards the last ride in the champion hurdle, and it's Annie Power comes towards it now. She's about four lengths clear. Viziosi jumped it perfectly.
Hello and welcome along to another episode of From the Horse's Mouth. Paddy and Ruby are alongside me as ever as we gear up for classic action at the Curragh this weekend. We speak to the red hot Shane Foley, who has made a serious start since racing returned. We pay tribute to one of the greats of the Irish turf on this week's Racing Gold, and Frank Hickey is on with a few winners. All that and more straight from the horse's mouth. Yes, you're very welcome back to another edition. We were in between back-to-back classic weekends. Ruby, excellent weekend in Newmarket last weekend. Cameco stealing the show.
Yeah, it was good racing. I mean, even from Gaillat on Friday, Cameco, Love on Saturday, or Sunday even. Forget my day of the week we have, but it was great racing. I suppose Pinatubo was a bit disappointing. Arizona definitely blew out, but I suppose watching the market before the race, that nearly told you that was going to happen, which was a bit surprising with Ryan Moore riding him. But Cameco was good for Oisin Murphy, Andrew Balding. I hope he goes to the Derby, Tom. He looked like a horse to me. The further he was going, the more impressive he was going to be. I hope he goes to the Derby. I mean, there's talks that he won't, but I think it would look the obvious place for him.
Yeah, I think Andrew Balding is quite keen to go. All he needs to do is talk David Redvers around to the idea. Paddy, impressive winner of the 2,000 guineas, but it was all about the 1,000 guineas for you because you tipped up the forecast.
I did. I didn't do the forecast. In fact, I didn't even back Love. I backed the second. Well, actually, each way, it was Grand Circle of Spirits, or Cloak of Spirits, rather, the Hannon horse. And so, so that was the thing. I was between the two of them and picked the wrong one, but hopefully a couple of people backed it. But yeah, on Cameco, I think Cameco didn't have an easy race, like, or easy run through. Like, I was still a rough enough race, wasn't it, in the 2000s? So to win as impressive as he did, I agree with Ruby completely. I think could be properly top drawer, like, and as Love clearly is top drawer. I mean, she really ran away from at the end. So I think we saw two really good winners, and it's like, it is strange watching them with no crowds cheering, and it's probably less hype afterwards than you'd normally get with connections and all that kind of stuff. But I think two proper good winners, those classics.
I thought the stalls on Saturday would be where they were on Sunday. I thought they would be in the middle of the track like they were last year. So I was surprised when I turned on the television on Saturday to see that the stalls were actually on the stand side rail. So, you know, when they came out, Oisin, you said it was a rough race, Paddy. When they came out, Oisin Murphy was very aware of that. And because he was drawn in 15 right against the stand side rail, when he came out, he moved away from there to give himself an option to be able to go left or right when he needs to get a run. It's something maybe that Colin Keane will have to do on Siskin as well on tomorrow night. He's drawn in two and could get boxed onto the rail. So, yeah, Oisin Murphy was very alive to that early in the race.
Did he pull him back? I missed it. Did he pull him back then at the start, or just get out quick and get a
cross? No, and Andrea Anzini broke sharp outside him and went quite quick and went forward. So when he came across, Oisin Murphy moved out, started the track Ryan Moore on Arizona, which you would have thought on paper was the right horse to be following. As it turned out, it was Wichita was the more prominent O'Brien runner. But that gave Oisin Murphy the options. Now, I thought watching it and watching it head on, he probably could have gone inside William Buick on Pinatubo, but you see things differently when you're on a horse's back. And he elected to go to the right-hand side of Pinatubo, which meant he also had to go around with Cheetah or Wichita as well, which made it quite difficult. But he did the right thing early in the race. He got himself off the rail and gave himself the option of being able to go left and right.
Ruby, the start of the flat season means many things to many people, but it often means a lot of bubbles burst. For Pinatubo, all isn't lost, is it? He still finished third in the Classic. They can pick up the pieces, can't they?
They can, but I suppose your winter dreams, you're hoping you had the superstar, another God knows what. But yeah, that bubble is burst likely. Will they have to go back and trip with him? Only time will tell. I imagine he'll go to the James's Palace and we'll find out, but the bubble is burst, Tom. Simple as that.
You're listening to From the Horse's Mouth by Paddy Power.
The great Gordon Lord Byron was preparing for another dash up the Curragh when he sadly passed away earlier this week at the age of 12. His career longevity was remarkable, especially so considering he suffered a fractured pelvis on his racecourse debut. Let's go back to 2013 and listen to one of his three Group 1 victories.
And Gordon Lord Byron has moved through on the far side to take over there. Slade Power challenging down the near side from Hoofit and Soul. Hamza's a couple of lengths off them. Gordon Lord Byron running that solo up the far rail, passing the furlong. Slade Power is giving chase. Then Soul and Hoofit, Hamza and Hawkeye the new. But it's Gordon Lord Byron in front, runner up in the race 12 months ago. He reigns supreme this time. And Gordon Lord Byron wins the Betfred Sprint Cup from Slade Power.
Well, that was Gordon Lord Byron winning the 2013 Haydock Sprint Cup. He'd already bagged a Prix de la Faria at Longchamp, and he became the first Northern Hemisphere horse to win a Group 1 in Sydney when he stole the George Ryder Stakes at Rose Hill in the final strides. He also raced in Dubai, Hong Kong, and he won a couple of... He was a stalwart of Irish racing. And all that after failing to attract a bid as a yearling, I believe. It's an incredible story. And while the ending was earlier than they would have wanted, Tom Hogan and his owners chose to emphasize their many happy memories this week as they said goodbye to their stable star. Ruby, an incredible story, really, especially the fact that they managed to hold on to him throughout his career, because a lot of that flat game when the horse shows a little bit of promise on the track, they're kind of up for sale straight away.
You usually are, because you're talking telephone numbers to go for a price tag for a horse like Gordon or Byron, who could go and achieve what he achieved. I mean, you've listed him out there, Tom. I mean, he came to prominence when he won the Prix de Forêt, which was a Group 1 over 7. He won a Desmond Stakes over a mile, which was his prep for that race in Haydock, which was over 6 furlongs. It was 7 furlongs when he won in Australia. He was so variable at distances. I mean, he ran over 5. He won over a mile. And he was an incredible, he had incredible longevity. I mean, you look down through his career, he won, what did he win? 16 races under rules, was second 17 times. I mean, it's an incredible record.
Paddy, Slade Power was second to him in Haydock that day, so an angle for you into the race, but you couldn't help but have a little bit of admiration for that kind of story, Shreven.
Ah, totally. I mean, that was the year before Slade Power's champion season, and actually the horse Lethal Force is in that race as well, another July Cup winner. So, I mean, it was a very good race, a few good handicappers in there as well. But I thought his most impressive victory was the one in Australia. Who's got the Ryder Stakes, whatever. That was like, I just watched that again this morning, and God, he really flew home at the end. That was really impressive. And he had loads of different jockeys. It was Johnny Murt on him that day. It was Craig Williams thing in Australia, and he had different jockeys along through the years. He's around so long, he's probably retired a couple of jockeys as well. But it's very unusual to get a horse that can go that far at that level. And some of the times, because he was a gelding, I guess, he was never a temptation to send him off to stud or anything. So that probably allowed for him to keep going longer than you would have expected. But it's very rare that a horse maintains top level form for a number of years. Normally you have a one or two seasons at your peak, and then you start the steady decline, and as people in race will always whinge about, like it's very slow to come back down. Not that he'd ever run in a handicap, but it's very slow to come back down in the ratings. So I think Gordon O'Byron is just like one of those once in a lifetime horses for the connections, and I think they did an amazing job with him as well. His career was nearly ended on his first start. I think he damaged his pelvis coming out of the stalls, and Tom Hogan was saying that today, and he's talking about it. Just really, I would have met Tom a lot, because he would have been racing against Gordon or Byron quite a lot with Slade Power rather. And so he would have, over those couple of seasons, would have met him quite a bit. But when you're traveling, the Irish connections kind of chat to each other. And just a lovely fella, very like everybody wishing each other luck, like a heartfelt luck. And you could see how much care and attention the horse did get. And he was then got physio every week and got trips to the seaside and all sorts of stuff. And even the way he talks about him, he hated the rain. I saw that with Eddie Lyon and a lot of trainers as well with their horses. They really know them, the personalities of them, and they really get to know them well. And Tom Hogan was like that with Gordon Lord Byron. So a lot of sympathy for it. But I really like the attitude of it wasn't ideal, the horse dropping down in the gallops. But at the same time, just think about the amount of good times the horse has had, love and life, and the great times the connections had too.
Ruby, a lot of lines in the media probably have leaned on the phrase rags to riches. He was kind of an unwanted yearling nearly. Why would that be? What would people be looking for that maybe made him undesirable? And how kind of often does that happen in terms of a good one slipping through the cracks and being unsold or whatever?
Well, I suppose it happens both ways, Tom. I mean, you look as sceptical, being let go by Godolphin, and look what he's doing at the moment in Ireland for 2,800 to Dennis Hogan, even picked him up. But I suppose being by Byron probably didn't look Gordon or Byron that appealing to many people. Maybe he wasn't, confirmation wise, he wasn't perfect. I don't know. I never played that much attention to him as a horse physically to look at him. I obviously watched him a lot racing, but there'd be loads of reasons why he just wasn't fashionable and no one wanted him. But I mean, he was incredible. Good horses are sound horses. And when you have a horse that can run over 100 times in the career, he's a sound horse. And that's what made Gordon Lord Byron such a good horse.
You're listening to From the Horse's Mouth by Paddy Power.
Racing resumed in Ireland on Monday at Naas, and one man that was very quick out of the blocks was Mr. Shane Foley. Six rides in Naas, four winners, 2 seconds, quiet in Leopardstown, and then another couple of winners yesterday in Navan. It's a pretty good time to be Shane Foley, is it?
Yeah, we've had a good start. You know, look, the horses are healthy and well, and makes my job an awful lot easier. But no, with the weekend that's coming up, it's nice to be in a rich vein of form.
Absolutely. And Shane, talk to us a little bit how you've been keeping busy through lockdown and no racing. I assume you've been riding out for Jessica Harrington, your boss, quite a lot, and keeping other trainers happy.
Yeah, look, we were riding always. Look, the horses never stopped. Obviously, we weren't galloping them much, but they were kept taking over, and we kept riding out, keep the eye in, and riding work for Joe Leary and Ken Condon, that's whoever really needs me. And my wife had a riding school there. Obviously, it was closed up, but there was plenty of homework jobs getting done that I've been putting on the long finger for a while, so got all them done. Glad to get back racing on Monday. It was nearly like a break.
To avoid the hardship at home. Come here and tell us, how has it been for you? I mean, obviously, Mill Isle was probably a ride you'd been looking forward to all winter, and then she goes to Newmarket in bizarre circumstances and you can't go yourself. Obviously, that must have been hard for you to watch. What was kind of going through your head when you realised you wouldn't be able to go?
Yeah, look, it was disappointing, and she ran disappointing. I think she's not better than that, you know what I mean? But at the time, look, it was frustrating. But look, on the basis of these things happen, it was out of anyone's hands, you know what I mean? But look, we were glad to get up and going on Monday, and hopefully she can show herself better in the Commonwealth Cup, maybe, if she goes.
This weekend, obviously, you're on the way to Goran later on today, Thursday, as we record, but you've got a big couple of days in the Curragh coming up, and you've got a great book of rides. You've got Free Solo in the 2,000 guineas. Do you give him much of a chance?
Yeah, look, he's a horse that doesn't really excite you at home, and he was the same last year, and he went out and he impressed us in his maiden. That form got a boost as well. The horse that was behind him came out and won a trial the other night. Look, he's a horse that he go on good ground. He's been pleasing us in his work without ever exciting you, and just hope he comes alive at the races. But he was quite impressive that day in Leopardstown. He surprised me a bit, considering his homework was just okay, you know. So hopefully he can do the same tomorrow.
And we haven't got Dex yet, but it looks like you'll probably ride a market leader in the 1,000 guineas, will you?
Yeah, I'll big me all going well. I think on the declaration there, there was 15. I didn't see draws or anything yet, but oh, she's in great shape, and she's looking forward to riding her. She's a very, very good filly, and she, albeit she is a bit quirky and she has her own thoughts sometimes, but when she does put it together, she's very, very good.
How has she been a bit quirky, Shane, in your experience? What does she kind of spook at things, or does she have her own way of thinking sometimes?
She does. Look, she's typically chasing a filly and that, but she gets in time in the mile here now. She wasn't seasoned and that, and she got very warm, and she wasn't easy that day, and again, in San Anita, she was a bit awkward early and got herself back. Look, the track probably didn't suit, but no, that's just her, and it's the same at home. You know, she does her work, but if you change her routine, she can get a bit nasty. But the good ones always, some of them always have a quirk, but she definitely does. But no, at the back of it, she's very, very good.
Shane, Paddy here. Just interested in the psychology of how you're feeling when the things are going so well for you at the moment. Does it change your mindset going into a race? You're obviously a bit excited coming into a big weekend and everything, but with Jess's horses going so well.
Oh, massive, massive. It obviously gives you a one out on everything, think you can nearly win on it, you know what I mean? Especially leading into them big races, and can't be a jockey with confidence as well. And Jessie's very good to ride for, and she leaves it up to you. So, no, look, when the horses are in that kind of form, it makes your job an awful lot easier. And things happen that if you weren't having a good run, you'd get knocked down, whereas when things are going right, everything seems to fall your way. So just hope that happens Saturday as well.
And Jane, obviously these are still strange times. We maybe have weathered the storm, but racing behind closed doors, even on the television, it sounds and looks a bit odd. From a riding perspective, how have you found all the measures that are in place? And I suppose the big part of it is, what's it like riding a winner with no crowd to cheer you home? Is that a bit weird as well?
Yeah, well, look, it's obviously not ideal, but look, bar on the Irish race and bar it's the really big days, the Galway Festival, the Guineas days, there wouldn't be thousands at the races anyway. Now, I know it takes away, there's not much atmosphere there at all, but look, it's nice to staff get a kick out of it, you get a kick out of it, so can't be the winner no matter where it is. And I always say, whether it's Tramore or the Curra or everything, you still get that winning feeling. The yard has the winning feeling, the owners, you know what I mean? Everyone is still involved, so look, can't beat winning, really. And I know it's a bit surreal that there's no one there, but you're still a winner at the end of the day.
And how have you found the measures at the race courses? They've been pretty straightforward to follow and everyone's kind of keeping on side?
Yeah, look, everybody knows what they have to do. Everybody has a role to play, and in fairness to the tracks, they have everything laid out really good for us. Look, the first day was a bit different for us, and it's just about getting into the routine. We're looking for safety of everyone and obviously the general public looking in, but no, everybody has complied. The face masks are probably the hardest for us when we're riding a bit going to start and that, but we don't have to wear them during the race and back up. But that's the only really difficult thing about it, but it's something that, look, it's not major, you can get used to it.
We had Jessie on last week, and before I let her go, I asked her for a two-year-old's name, and she gave me a horse, an Australia filly, called Uda Nutter, I think it was called. I'm not really sure.
Udenata.
Udenata, right, okay. I thought it was Who's the Nutter by the time I was finished. I didn't know who it was. But
yeah.
Any two-year-olds down there that are catching your eye, and maybe any horse for some of the Premier Handicaps this weekend to keep an eye out for as well?
Yeah, well, I think Taran Sherman is a horse that's likely raced, and he's in good shape. He runs the Lincoln tomorrow. It's for sure. I think he'll improve a bit, but he's been working good. We're happy with him. Another few two-year-olds off the bat. Udenata is nice. We have a big Terraconte colt, Los Andes, called Niarca, as far as we like him. And one or two-year-olds disappointed, Jesse, but that can happen for a two-year-old. First time I would get a bit stage fright, you know. But no, we have a lovely team of horses and some good older ones as well. Teenage Spirit last night, and them 2-3-year-old fillies are nice to compete with them good races later on the season.
Lovely stuff. Well, Shane Foley, we'll let you go. Long may the rich vein of form continue. Best of luck at the weekend and best of luck for the rest of the season.
Thanks.
Horse racing, eh? A field of horses you've never heard of, and then the start's delayed so the coverage goes split screen with another race. Pwah! But given we've had so little sport recently, those unknown horses are just the next big thing. And delayed races? Builds the anticipation. Split screen? Double the excitement. Racing, we've missed you. And you can now watch all UK and Irish racing live for free on the Paddy Power app. Paddy Power. Live streaming available to Paddy Power customers. Network charges may apply. T's and C's apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
Well, it's time for this week's tipping section, and plenty of our horses to follow have run in the last few days, including Frank English King.
Yeah.
Who was very impressive. You got a little sweat on for the Derby now?
A little sweat. I wasn't expecting that now, to be honest. I thought he might win and be like a 12 or 14 to 1 shot for the Derby and have a bit of an each way sweat, but he wasn't just visually impressive. The clock and sectionals say he put in a massive performance, and he was 3 seconds faster than the Oaks trial, and his closing section was faster as well. So I think he's the one to beat, and that's just not my pocket talking.
Interesting. When you talk about clock and sectionals there, listeners can keep an ear out for our sectional healing segment after Ascot. But in the meantime, Frank, busy weekend in Ireland, classic action on the cards. We record on a Thursday because the Irish 2000 Guineas is on a Friday. Give us your take on this year's Irish 2000 Guineas.
Yeah, look, Siskin's favourite probably deserves to be. No question mark getting a mile. The one I've had a few quid on is Lupe Fernandez. Like, even last weekend in the English Guineas, you won't go too far wrong backing in. No problem with that. Obviously, he had Wichita finished second in the 2000 Guineas and Love run away with the 1000 Guineas. Now, Lupe Fernandez has won twice at the Curragh already. He was second in the Cheshire, beaten 3 1/4 length by Pinatubo last year. That was a pretty decent effort. He was third behind Pinatubo again in the Vintage Stakes at Goodwood. He was very impressive when winning a Group 3 here over 6 furlongs before disappointing in the Middle Park. In the Middle Park, he was never really in the race. He was out the back and he never got into it. But he's related to horses who were winning over a mile and 10 furlongs. And I think the step up to mile actually might bring about more improvement. Shamey Heffernan has picked him to ride as well. So I think that's another plus for his chances. So I'd say he'll go.
Very good. Paddy Power, your own personal opinion on the 2,000 guineas?
Yeah, well, it's obviously Siskin versus Aidan O'Brien, it looks like, doesn't it? But I'm actually going for somebody outside of those two. But Frank said there, Siskin's, there's a small doubt about the trip. But I don't know if the bit of rain, there'll be enough rain to get into the ground, because he was least impressive, I suppose, when the ground was a bit softer. It looks like a machine on good ground. And I was surprised that Armory's a shorter price than Loopy Fernandez, because Armory was so disappointed at Longchamp at the end of the year. But that was on soft as well, so maybe not. But I'm going to go for Shane Foley and Free Solo, who was very impressive when beating that Cormorant, who won the Darrenstown the other day. No doubt about the trip. Like, there might be something speedier in there, but no doubt about the trip. And we'll definitely go on the ground and at a big price each way. I think, Free Solo for me.
Very good. Free Solo for Paddy Power in the 2,000 guineas, written by Shane Foley, who we spoke to earlier. But of course, Ruby, you missed that.
Did you tell me yet? I should have heard.
No. Go on, tell us who do you fancy for the 2,000 guineas.
Let me guess how that went. He's a jockey, so pretty much fancied everything he was riding. Thought they'd all go really well. They're working really well. They're in great form.
Yeah, bucking probably, and squealing.
Yeah, probably done about 5,000 of those interviews myself. Pretty predictable, really.
Go on, tell us your own opinion on the Irish 2,000 guineas.
I think if Siskin stays, he'll win. But going from 6 furlongs to a mile, he has the stamina on the dam side, but I don't know. He just looked so fast at Truro last year, and after watching Pinatubo last weekend, it probably puts a doubt in your mind, but he definitely was the best of these as a 2-year-old. I can see why Paddy's giving Free Solo a chance, but if you're going on those lines, you probably should be giving Vatican City a chance as well. I mean, he's an incredible pedigree, won a maiden in Dundalk. I made his debut in Newmarket for some reason, but he's an incredible pedigree. And being by Galileo, he's probably open to the most improvement out of all of these, stepping up in trip as a 3-year-old. And I think it's about Siskin. Will he stay or won't he stay? But if I was looking for one each way, I'd be going with Vatican City.
Ruby, just a quick word on the weather, because we're getting a drop of rain in Ireland for the first time in a long time. Would the drop of rain be a concern for Siskin?
Possibly, but as you said, Tom, we are recording on a Thursday. I was in Winnie Mullins's this morning and the ground was like the road, yet Gorn is now gone good to yielding for this afternoon's meeting. I can't imagine there'd be much yielding in it, and I think the Curragh will take every drop of rain that's forecast. There was no rain on the Curragh last night. I was talking to a friend of mine who was on the Curragh this morning and there was no rain. So I think it'll take the rain. I just think the way the ground is at the minute, like, it's good to firm places on the round course in the Curragh. They've been putting plenty of water on and it looks nice and green, but I can't see this rain making that much difference.
Very good. Onward we go. A couple of Premier handicaps sprinkled throughout the cards over the weekend. And of course, the highlight being the Paddy Power Irish Lincolnshire. Paddy, you must be over the moon.
I'm over the moon. You know, being the Lincoln, it's always one of the race that I always thought it would be great if we could sponsor, you know, so it's great. It's just a shame we can't be down there, you know, ourselves presenting the prize and all that kind of stuff. Now, it's great to be involved on a big day. I'm only taking the mic, but it is great to be involved on a big day. And this is a proper big handicap. I've done it myself as Connection Syndicates, trying to target these big races. And there's big pots there for people. They're very hard to win, you know, and I even see by the betting it's probably going to be 6 or 7 to 1 the field, I'd imagine, maybe 5 to 1 at the off, but wide open, as you'd imagine. Shane Foley did give a good mention to their one, which was what was it called again? Tour and Shaman. Yeah, Tour and Shaman. He said that was working quite well at home, but I'm going to go for Njord. Their best form is on soft grounds. What Ruby just said there about the rain not getting into it's a bit of a worry, but just could be quite well handicapped, and just for it as an each way price, probably going to be about 10 or 12 to 1. So
the Touran Shaman confidence straight out of the Ruby Wall School interviewing. Ruby, what do you fancy in the Irish Lincoln?
Again, it's wide open. You can make a case for a current option who I think would be the likely favourite of Aidan McGuinness's. His form is best over 7 furlongs, though. He won the Sovereign Path in Leopardstown. He was a 7th furlong winner in Thirsk before that in July last year. Bash year of Dermot Wells. He's 2 from 4, won at Gore and Maiden and won in Galway when he won over a mile. But he was disappointing, I thought, in his handicap debut at the Curragh on Champions Weekend behind Bo Pedro when he was 6-15. I think it's an open race, but I think it often does throw up a winner with a bit of age on his side. And for that reason, I'm going to go with Salt on Stall, the pivotal gelding, who's guaranteed to get the trip and will be a big price each way.
Frank Hickey, Irish Lincoln, extra places from Paddy Power as sponsors, no doubt.
We're going a mad 6 places, Tom, which is very generous. So each way, Keys will be out in force. But the one I like, being the old softy that I am, and for the week that's in it, is Nebo for Tom Hogan. This horse had excellent form as a 2-year-old. He was placed in 4 Group 2s as a 2-year-old, the Superb Stakes, the Richmond Stakes, the Millreave Stakes, and a French Group 2, as well as winning the Group 3 Horse Hill. Now, as a 3-year-old, the wheels really came off. He went off 9-2 for the free handicap at Newmarket, disappointed, finished last in the Guineas, and switched to Tom Hogan. Didn't show a whole pile till his last run on turf at the Curragh in a listed race when he was only beaten a length and a half. He got a little snatched up. He wouldn't have won, but I think he would have been beaten maybe no more than a length. He's running off a mark of 97 here. And he's only 5 still. Ben Cohn's claiming 3 off, and he's the rag of the field. And I thought he might be one for an each way bet, and it would be a great boost to the yard after a difficult week.
The last race we're going to look at for this weekend in detail, Paddy, is the 1,000 guineas. Talk to me.
Yeah, I think I don't know how much detail you need to go into. I think it's all about Albina. Favourite. She's going to be, I'm guessing about, Frank will tell you, but she's going to be about 7-4, I'd say. She was 2-1, 7-4 when the stable companion was in, but Jessica told us last week that she wasn't going to run, so Albina is going to be clear favourite here. I think she's going to be very hard to beat. She had the one time she was disappointed was in the Moy Glare, and Shane said earlier the reason for that, I knew it was an excuse, I couldn't remember what it was, but it's that she was in season, that's why she ran bad. She was very impressive on Arc Day at Longchamp. And I just think the Aidan O'Brien runners don't look unbeatable in this race. So, yeah, all about Albina. I think a winning favourite in the 1,000 guineas.
Frank, whilst maybe Mill Oil was a little bit disappointing in Newmarket, Jessica Harrington has been absolutely red hot since racing returned in Ireland. Could Albina get very, very short here?
Yeah, you could see her going off 6-4, particularly if Jessie has a couple of winners tomorrow at the Curragh. You can just see them steaming in behind her. She probably has the best form in the race as well. Yeah, she'd probably be the one to beat, but there's one here full of potential. And like, while this race might come a little bit too soon for her, I think Redenza is one to definitely keep an eye on. She's very well bred. She's by See the Stars after a Group 2 winner, Radara. So she's bred to be very good. She won her maiden in Leopardstown. It looked a very useful maiden at the time. Mythic was in there. I think that had run well in debut as it to Salka. She beat them handy. She wasn't in the best position, perhaps, and showed a good turn of foot to come home quickly in a fast section. The 4th Lamista won a listed race since. The 6th Deirdre won a maiden. The 9th Peaceful won a maiden and was touched off in a listed race. There was a fair bit of depth to that maiden. She was into about 12-1 just before Dex, but I'd imagine she'll drift just because she's a once race maiden winner. I'd be surprised if you couldn't get 20-1 maybe in the morning of the race. And at that sort of price, I'd nearly be willing to take a chance on her.
Ruby Walsh, 1,000 guineas.
It's hard to see past Albina, and even the way she finishes out her races, Tom, she didn't look a likely winner on a couple of occasions in the Curragh yet. When she hit top gear in the last half of furlong, she flew home, both over 6 furlongs. She ran obviously won over a mile in Longchamp, and she was unlucky in Saint Anita, the Breeders' Cup. I think it's all about her stamina is no issue. And I think what beats her will win, and I think the only danger to her is herself.
Very good. Righto, time for best bets of the weekend for the From the Horse Mouth Treble. We will start with Paddy Power. Paddy, what's your best bet of the weekend?
That's gracious. I can steal Albina then. Albina for me.
Albina in the 1,000 guineas for Paddy. Ruby?
I'd say go to Frank next time, just waiting on something to come through here, declaration-wise.
All right, Frank?
Yeah, I'll go with Lupe Fernandez in the 2,000 guineas.
Okay, right. Guineas double action in the From the Horse's Mouth Treble this weekend. And Ruby, as I try to give you as much time as I possibly can, what is your best bet of the weekend?
Don't worry, Tom. I'll fill the airspace here for a second. I'm just waiting to have a look at the declarations for about the only race that I could possibly have any knowledge about, which is the 2-mile handicap on the first race on Sunday. It has to be one thrown in here that was useful over jumps and is going forward. And I would think that horse could be Dalton Highway at Dermot Wells. I think he's still well in with Andy Slattery, Clement Five off his back, 9-11, bring him back to 9-12.
Dalton Highway to round out the treble this week. Frank, you'll stick it up on Stoughton, you'll enhance it first, because let's face it, we haven't been too close to any time recently. So you can throw it up any price you like at the minute.
Yeah, we'll do something with it, all right.
Frank, you're a gentleman, all the best.
No bother, enjoy the weekend.
You're listening to From the Horse's Mouth by Paddy Power.
As we come towards the tail end of this week's show, it's time for the last installment, the sting in the tail. It's Paddy Power's stupid questions.
Thanks very much, Tom. This is the moment I've been looking forward to all week, and thanks very much for all my many thousands and hundreds of millions of fans who've been sending me through all these questions. And, you know, I really appreciate all of it. And, you know, I will try and send out some signed photographs of myself when I do get the chance. It's the lockdown and that with the post and all that. But the first question is, at Paul Robinson says, Ruby, how do jockeys' fees actually work? Do all jockeys get the same fee, but certain jockeys command a higher win percentage?
No, everyone's fee is the same. It's a basic fee, which is actually the minimum you're allowed to charge, but nobody's ever charged any more. And then everyone gets the same percentage, though maybe guys do have certain relationships, are retainers. There's not very many over jumps. There are a few on the flat, but everyone gets paid the same.
Okay. Let's see. What the hell did cheek pieces do? The real Kino asked.
It's a good question. I'm not sure myself.
Really?
I'm more of a blinkers fan than a cheek piece fan. Cheek pieces are designed to do the same thing as blinkers, but obviously allow a horse to see more. So they're there to make a horse concentrate. But I think if you need cheek pieces, you need blinkers.
Okay. And one on a topic you love talking about, at Dido Ireland, or Dido Ireland, said, why did Annie Power leave the ground so early on approach to the last in the 2015 mares?
I don't know. Speed, I think. I don't know why she did. She shouldn't have. There was a full, well, not a full stride, but there was definitely more power for her, or more room for her to take another stride. I don't know why she did. She guessed, but horses do that. Plenty of them do it.
Okay, and then the other one is, the last one I'll ask you today, at Ad Hunter 1984 says, what are the commentators stroke experts looking for when they say a horse is travelling well?
That would mean they're looking at the jockey's body language, basically. So the jockey won't be moving, and there would look to be plenty of contact between the jockey's hands and the horse's mouth on the reins. So that's what they'll be looking at for travelling well.
So hang on, sorry.
Still jockey with a height hold.
So you want the reins to be tight, the horse to know you're holding it, or?
When a horse is travelling well, the reins will be tight because the jockey's trying to slow him down. And a horse that's not travelling well, the reins will be loose because the jockey's trying to make him go faster.
Oh, okay. I actually never knew that. There you go. Ruby, last one. At Adrian H 7641207 asks, why can't horses wear different shoes for different surfaces like tyres on Formula One cars?
Well, they do, Paddy. There are limits as to how much of a nail or a cock you can put on a shoe to give a horse grip when you get slippy ground. Or really hard ground and you want a bit more grip, but there's a limit on how long they can be. So you put a more protruding nail and a slight cock, which is like a stud on the outside of a hind shoe. So you can put a cock and a longer nail, but there are limits as to how long they can be, and that's for when horses gallop on stricken jockeys.
Okay.
That was Paddy Power's stupid questions. Paddy, thanks a million.
That's great. No, honestly, thanks for it. Look, it's a pleasure just to give something back.
It's nice we found a role for you.
Yes, yeah, you're like the young fella on work experience now. We'll have to find out something next for you to do now. We'll speak to you throughout the week, next week maybe. Royal Ascot, we're going to maybe give you a shout a couple of days next week, if that's all right.
Brilliant, look forward to it, yeah.
Ruby looks full of dread there. But
you're including me in that, yeah.
The odd day, only the odd day. Anyway, thanks a million, lads. I'll talk to you next week.
Do you see that in the fine print in your contract?
I don't have it. Do you get a contract? Jeez.
That's it for this week, but be sure to join us from Monday as we have daily shows throughout the week of Royal Ascot with hopefully a few winners thrown in there as well. My thanks to our very own Solero and Solanio, Paddy and Ruby. Thanks to Shane Foley, Frank the Tank, and most of all, thanks to you for listening. Don't forget to check out the treble on paddypower.com, and we'll speak to you on Monday. For now, I've been Tom Nugent, and that has been From the Horse's Mouth.
From the Horse's Mouth is a Muddy Knees Media production for Paddy Power.